Hello, listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of Building It Up with Bertelsmann, India's first podcast that features and focuses on the growth story of Indian startups. This is Ankur Variku, your host, and with me today is a person who is not just an entrepreneur par excellence, but also one of India's most loved and cherished mentors, Alok Kejriwal. Alok is the co-founder and CEO of Games to Win, and today we're going to talk about how Games to Win got to 170 million downloads without spending a single penny, and Alok's favorite word while doing it, engagement. There is so much to take away from Alok that I hope you enjoyed this conversation just as much as I did. Thank you so much, Alok, for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on Building It Up with Bertelsmann. Let me go straight into Games to Win. So, when you started gaming, was this loose, if I may use the word, time waste phenomena, definitely in this country, if not outside. And you saw the potential of making this into a business, starting with how brands could connect to consumers to that. Was it obvious to you from day one that this would work?
You know, I'm obsessed by engagement. So let me come back to like 30 seconds of my life before we started.
Love to.
I worked in a socks factory for 9 years. The moza banata tha. Now, if you work in a socks factory, which is actually a stone's throw from where we are, what do you learn? You know, you learn machine, workers, yarn. But if you go a little beyond that, you figure out what consumers do with your product. And that's what happens in the shops. So when I used to see how consumers would engage with what I was doing, I was thrilled because there was a high, right? That they pick it up, they look at it, they feel it. And that obsession began to manifest in me in terms of, can I make engagement a business?
Nice.
That's my core DNA, right?
Nice.
And it manifests in everything I do. So when the internet came around and I was fed up of, you know, being another worker in my father's factory and getting, by the way, getting worker salary, I said, let's do something around my passion of engagement. And believe it or not, you know, if you look at the Olympics, why do we love them every 4 years? You're not running the race. You're watching someone win a race or not win a race. You're engaging in a game that is not even something you're participating in. So I challenge anybody to get a scratch card and not scratch it. So engagement is our nature. And I surface that in terms of a product.
What was it? Was it then obvious that mobile matched with gaming would be your form of bringing engagement to consumers' life, or did it come about through multiple iterations?
You know, Ankur, nothing comes about, right? I wish it did. That's what the movies are made of. It didn't obviously come around mobile. It became a web-based business first. And very early in my first venture, because there was no internet in India, I had to literally, you know, create a reason to be on the internet, and brands bought that story. But later on, as the internet began to proliferate, consumers began to show up. You know, there was a purity around the internet then, which is consumer for consumer, not just for brand sake. But what we learned in those years of doing web-based games was that some themes worked, some themes didn't work. And, you know, some games were universal. There was some kind of themes that anywhere in the world would work. I had a very large kind of experience with the VAS business model in India. And honestly, that was quite terrible and terrifying because we were kind of, all of us were engaged in giving things people didn't want on mobile phones because of money. And that really taught me the lesson of, you know, purity of content and mobile as the platform to distribute. So when the iPhone came around, that was our nirvana. And because we had prepared a backlog of titles, we could load up onto that platform much, much before lots of people did.
And you saw through that early on?
We didn't. No, I wish we did. But I think we caught on very fast. So as an entrepreneurial trait, I don't really think that being, you know, I don't even know what a visionary means, like someone who has 20/20 vision, but just catching on. You know, so you know what they call your ears on the rail. You can, you don't have to see the train, you can hear it coming. And as long as you can do that, you're fine.
You just respond with possibly the fastest possible speed.
Rather
than always being right about it, for sure. Was it in the early part, Alok, harder to sell to the brands or harder to sell this concept to consumers?
You know, brands are beautiful. brands always love innovation.
Yeah.
And brands always respect ideas.
I want the audience to record that and memorize it. And we all think that brands don't want to buy. Mm. And what you just said is just so true. It is so true. Please go.
Brands are beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, many years ago, even before I'd started, I read in the Financial Times that brands are the new gods of consumers.
Yeah.
You know, they surveyed a lot of people on the streets of London and New York,
mm-hmm.
and they said, who do you believe in? Mm. They named a few gods and they named Nike, and they said, we believe in Nike. So brands exemplify what you want to become.
Yeah.
And brands are very positive and are very positive when you take to them ideas that help them and engage.
Yeah.
So it was actually much easier to sell to brands.
Mm.
The challenge of selling to brands is the finiteness of that, right? How often can you do it?
Yeah.
And brands, I have this four-stage process. I call the four-way test. So the first sale happens by just you know, personality, just your. It's what I call the glimmer in your eyes, right? The second one happens is persuasion. Let me do it again.
Mm.
The third one becomes very, very hard, saying, you know, I've done it twice with you. What's my ROI?
Mm.
And then you push and shove and say, let me try it one more last time.
Sure.
The fourth one is where it all works or doesn't work.
Yeah.
So with brands, you have a four short lifespan of any great idea, and that's not scalable.
Yeah.
So consumers are the really tough guys. I mean, they're you and me, right?
Yeah.
When did we start changing our preferences and likes?
Yeah.
But if you engage them, going back to their core DNA,
sure.
They experiment.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. You want people to experiment.
Right.
And if you're good, you're good.
Yeah. I'm curious to know this, Alok. I see that the way people even engage with games has transformed a lot over years. And that, I would believe, is also a reflection of how society itself has evolved. And you would be at the helm of this. Like, you would now perhaps be one of the most intuitive consumer psychology individuals, if I may say so. Tell us how, like, when you start a game, what goes on in your mind?
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to know that.
It's a great question. I love this question. So our habits and our preferences have not changed.
Uh-huh.
When I started Games to Win and I pitched for my first round, I told my investors, you know, they were unfortunately a bunch of only men sitting in that room. And I said, guys, do you remember playing with dinky cars?
Yeah.
And they said, all said, yeah.
Yeah.
I said, that's what I'm doing. I'm taking the metaphor of the car and making it into a mobile game. So car driving and parking, and mind you, not racing, is our biggest franchise.
Seriously?
Yeah. Because that's what you did with dinky cars, right? You took them and you parked them and you drove them with your hand.
Exactly.
You never raced them.
Yeah.
Similarly, the biggest business in the world is, if you remember what Barbie did, dressing up.
Yeah.
Every girl and now boys have dolls.
Yeah.
So the second franchise we built was dress up games.
Wow.
Because they've always existed. So the simplicity is to observe what you've been already engaging with and surface it into a new platform and medium rather than creating a new concept of engagement, which, you know, if you do, then the gods are on your side. Then you build an Angry Birds or a Clash of Clan.
Yeah.
But if you want to start at the bottom of the ladder and say, look, at least let me do something that's a sure shot.
Yeah.
It's what you engage with in life. I mean, who doesn't engage in sports?
Yeah.
Which is like cricket is the biggest gaming genre in the country.
Correct.
Yeah. What we kind of love to do is gamify life.
Wonderful.
We keep looking at what we do in life and we keep taking slices of life and wrapping games around them.
Wonderful.
And they usually work out pretty fine.
Wonderful. How do you search for such people? Like, does most of that thinking come in from you, or now you have a team that does it? And what are the skills of such a team?
So honestly, it's about living with your target audience.
Mm.
You know, I keep saying I live with three women and people get shocked when I say that. Well, not you and me, but so my wife tells me about shopping and her obsession for clothes and you know what she does. My two daughters, the Games to Win company is based on them.
Mm.
So when we started, they were like 10 and 7 and now they're, you know, grown up.
Yeah.
And we just observe what they did.
Wow.
So the best way to build something for consumer, I believe, is to live with that consumer versus observing them versus thinking what they'll do. Sure. And it works out.
Got it.
I think there's a bit of learnification in gamification.
Yeah.
And if you can blend them together, I think there's no end to what you can gamify. It's just about time and people. Yeah. I could do this forever.
Wow. I love this. We could go on and on. I want to move to one aspect of yours, Alok, which not a lot of people appreciate as being so hard. You were one of the first few businesses that began to go out international sooner than one would have expected. And of course, you had your mixed bag of success and so. But what drove you to that and what did it teach you?
I honestly came from my father's factory. Yeah. I started exports of socks when there was never a product that was exported from India.
Yeah.
And I learned the value of, you know, export market and the fortunes that came with it.
Yeah.
And then again, it was serendipity that SoftBank, who was the earliest investor in Contest to Win, said, you know, come to China.
Yeah.
So honestly, it wasn't our genius.
Sure.
It was just circumstances that made us go there.
Yeah.
But once we had tasted the ROI of an international market, it was no going back.
Yeah.
So one of the three tenets I built Games to Win on, the third tenet was we will not be for, we will be from India, but not for India.
Interesting.
In simple business terms, right?
Yeah.
A RPM, which is, you know, the resulting fill of a CPM, is 11x in the US versus it is in India. So now question is, why would you need to bother in a market when, you know, you have the same, you know, return on the same game in a different geography?
Correct.
And that's a mindset thing, right?
Correct. Wow. Look, Mobile to Win was one of the first companies to actually go in China. And in 2000s, no one even knew of China. Like, China didn't know of China. So one is, of course, we know how you got exposed to it. But what was your experience? What were your learnings? And how would that be different from what it is today?
So honestly, it was a phenomenal, it's like a roller coaster ride without, you know, without the handrails. Very scary, very thrilling, and for an entrepreneur, very enriching, because finally we made money there.
Oh.
Very, very hard. You know, Disney bought us for an all-cash transaction.
Of course, yes.
Minuscule at that in now's day, but still all-cash.
Yeah.
Right? Honestly, it taught me what I have as a country and what we have in India versus what we aspire to have in other places. You know, when we sold, we had to write to the Ministry of Culture to say, can I cooperate with Disney? You can't use the word sell to Disney to build my business, and then they will view it and give you permission.
Okay.
You know, we can do so many things in China that we just take so easily for granted here. And I think that experience beyond all made me so much more grateful of what we have and where we are versus just constantly saying we're not in a great place, some things are not working out, nothing is working here.
Yeah.
I think that's garbage.
Yeah.
But having said that, China also gave me the first, you know, taste of scale and of the ability to succeed in a country not your own.
It's super hard.
It's super hard and super fun.
Yeah, definitely.
And if you've got a great product, service or innovation, right, I think no country is a barrier.
Yeah.
And look at the global products we all use, right? My Starbucks, for example, it just penetrates every country it goes to.
True.
Because there's something about it that works.
Yeah.
So then I think geographical boundaries don't bother you anymore.
Got it. I will now force you to share some secrets, which I think is the defining order of your success, which is how you have made this into this mega 170 million download business and virtually no marketing.
Yeah.
All of it word of mouth virality attached to it. So help me understand and help our listeners understand, when you start a new game, you of course have done your research and you have the understanding of the consumer deeply. But what happens when you put it up on the Play Store and the App Store?
Right. Very, very, very simple thinking.
Yeah.
Right. We cannot afford to buy ads to buy acquisition.
Mm.
And not because ads are bad. It's because we don't have the mindset right now to make LTV, which is, you know, lifetime value, be greater than the cost of acquiring the user.
Yeah.
So there's very great nobility in buying audiences and churning them to get you more return, but we don't know how to do that.
Great.
We're ignoramuses.
That's a very, very important point.
Right. So now we're saying, okay, boss, we can't spend money.
Yeah.
So how do we make games that sell themselves?
Yeah.
Now, the earliest, to me, the most precious beauty about the internet and all internet products is that all great things sell themselves. You know, Airbnb, WhatsApp, Facebook, blah, blah, blah. They never put up a building, a hoarding on Tardev saying, come and download WhatsApp, right?
Yeah.
So, also intuitively, I feel that if it's great, it'll sell itself.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be marketed.
Mm.
That's the hard constraint we've put on ourselves.
Mm.
The first principle that you apply is by, you know, making it like a de-rigger, right? We latch on to categories and we say, can we become a master of a category rather than becoming the master of many, many games?
Mm.
So we've observed that there are five or six categories on the Play Store and iTunes Store, which are very, very which have this inherent quality of discovery by word of mouth versus, you know, deeper engagement or trying to get cohorts which are not easily word of mouth driven. So RPG, driving, which is racing, lots of sports in India, these happen very quickly. One of the most beautiful festivals and also unfortunately dangerous festivals in Mumbai is the Govinda Festival. And I observed that formation of the human pyramid using that metaphor. And I said, look, can't we make one game market the other? So we call it the Govinda effect. And our games reach all the ranks in a category because they market each other. So using simple but not so difficult algorithms and insights, we figure out who's playing which game and why should they not play the next game. So, and there's a company called Voodoo, which is, you know, built itself out exactly on the same principle. So games market themselves. People in certain categories love to get fresh stuff, and eventually you start building a network of your own that becomes viable in itself.
Nice. So the way that I understand this is fascinating. You're essentially creating a network effect of games. Is the monetization model still largely brand advertising driven, or do you also now see potential for in-app purchasing?
It's a great question again. There's a very beautiful thing going on the mobile game side. Globally, not so much in India. I'm not too close to the Indian market. Lots of brands are coming onto the mobile site. Mary Meeker slides are very, very, you know, clear about those. And we're still waiting for that aha moment. But as ad eCPMs become closer and closer to video CPMs, the ad dollars that you get are brilliantly lucrative. The second most important feature in games is rewarded ads. So now if I'm driving a game and if I've hit a car or if I've run out of fuel, hey, you got an ad, dude. You watch an ad and you refill your fuel. So the love that consumers have for rewarded ads is unbelievable. It's like looking for a remote control and not using it, right? Or not using the, throwing away the remote control when ads come on. And the third thing is in-apps happen, but the percentage of in-apps in a game is 1% or 0.5%. So the question is, can 99.5 equal to more than the 0.5? And with the arbitrage now of ads becoming rewarded and real world, it's a very compelling reason to have both. But, you know, the mind is always egoistical, right? And whenever I sit with my investors, they ask me, Alok, how many in-apps, what's your in-app percentage? So we've moved up, honestly, from like 1% to now 20%. So we have 20% in-apps. And that's also not because of our genius. It's just the consumer is now getting used to spending sweet spot $9.99. So we can't charge $99.99, but we're at $9.99. And it's working.
Is most of your business now outside of India?
So we have, in terms of revenue split, we're about 85% outside of India. But in terms of volume split, we're 50% outside of India.
India remains a, what my friend Kunal Shah calls a cheap DAU market. It's like people come here for cheap DAUs.
But it doesn't mean anything, right? What will you do with that DAU if you can't monetize it?
So to someone who's already in a business similar to this, which could be a gaming business or say a content business, which tries itself on network effects, would your strong suggestion be that the Indian market right now from a ad dollar perspective is not as deep and it's possibly better to look outside of India?
So I think let's look at the economics, right? I mean, if you look at the way the, you know, companies like Jio are constantly pounding the market with bandwidth, you'll have a deep growing supply. And the question is, can supply match up to demand? So advertisers in India have anyway been notorious for being frugal with, you know, we're a very performance driven market, right? We're not brand driven market. So where's the ad dollar going to come from? You know, forget whether the Indian consumer will watch the ad or not. That's a much later problem. Where's the supply? So I got a call from an entrepreneur who said, you know, we're only filling 30%. And I said, good for you. You're lucky you're filling 30% because the ad market is growing more than 30%, you know, so impressions served. So that's one. And I mean, it's, to be honest with you, I think international markets train you to be the best at what you can be versus an Indian market that spoils you with these distractions, like you said, DAU and I'm the greatest. But greatest for what? So yeah. I'm sure you know about the story of Nokia, that the reason they became the number one company in the world is because there weren't too many people to buy phones in Finland.
Yeah.
So you become the number one company because there's nothing to do in your country, right? So you can do it yourself, you know, yeah. Become nothing in your country.
Yeah. Great. Let's move to the other defining aspect of you, Alok. I'm curious, and I'm coming back to your start. You're an undergrad in commerce. So that doesn't technically qualify you to be a techie. And today you're doing more things than most successful techies would be. You're a successful entrepreneur, you're a successful mentor, you're now a successful author. Was there any point of time where you felt that your non-techiness came in the way, or did it actually help you because you didn't have any bias or baggage along with you?
So I call it the naivety of creativity.
Okay.
If you're naive, then you become creative.
Hmm.
That helped me a lot because, you know, in my life, my biggest meditation apart from the, you know, things that we do is why.
Hmm.
And the why surfaces at its highest peak when you don't know.
Nice.
So it helps me because I don't know.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's all about, you know, examples we've all seen in life, from jobs to whoever. It's just a figment of your imagination that I'm not a techie,
mm.
but then I'm an accountant and I'm a finance guy and I know that.
Mm.
So if I were an engineer, then I'd be missing that part of my life.
Mm.
So whenever entrepreneurs feel, I wish I was a techie guy,
mm.
then wish what would have happened if you were not that guy,
mm.
and what would you have lacked with what you have?
Mm.
It's very easy to find deficiencies in life,
yeah.
and not to celebrate what you're endowed with, right?
Yeah.
And that's a mind game I don't want to entertain.
Yeah, yeah. Do you feel that a large part of the, particularly startup world today, feels more entitled than they should?
Every generation does, and it's great.
Okay.
That's what moves mankind forward.
Hmm. On that note, the clarity with which you have already spoken and always have, Alok, thank you so much for being part
of this
podcast.
Thank you.
Wow, that was Alok for you all. There is just so much that he thinks deeply about and has so much wisdom about building a truly high engagement mobile app company using games, and using games which are very simple in their approach. I hope you genuinely enjoyed this conversation. I had a fantastic time. There's so much to take away from, whether it's the Robin Hood role, whether it's the new book that he's released, and of course, Games to Win. This is Ankur Variku, your host, signing off, and I hope you continue being active subscribers to Building It Up with Bertelsmann. We are there on iTunes, Savan, and SoundCloud, or wherever else that you listen to your podcasts. Until the next episode, bye.